Hello and welcome back to Everyday Oral Surgery. This is your host, Dr. Grant Stuckey. I'm an oral maxillofacial surgeon practicing in Denver, Colorado, and I really appreciate you tuning into the episode today. Thanks to all those who have emailed and texted me ideas about topics for the podcast or guests they want to hear from. If you would like to be a guest on the show or know someone you'd like to hear from, please email me at grantstuckey@gmail.com. Also, please visit our website, everydayoralsurgery.com, if you'd like to search the podcast in an easier way by topic. We'd like to hear from everyone and really appreciate you guys listening. Keep in mind that everything we're discussing here is based on personal experience and opinions, so please supplement everything you're learning here with approved research studies. Without further ado, please enjoy today's episode. Welcome to another episode. Today I'm with Dr. Andy Letcher. He is an oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing in the Atlanta, Georgia area. Andy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, happy to be here, Grant. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, this is great. I'm excited to talk to you kind of about your practice and, you know, how you built it, and maybe some we can get into some procedures and stuff like that. But can you just give us a brief history of your training and your current practice setup?
Yeah, I trained at Iowa, University of Iowa, grew up in the Midwest in Dubuque. And then after dental school, went to Ohio State from 86 to 90 and finished that training. And got a master's degree while I was at Ohio State, mostly in bone grafting, and was recruited by an oral surgeon in Atlanta, Georgia, to come down there, probably because I ran a seizure training at Ohio State. So I joined him for about 15 months, and then I set up my own practice. But I learned a lot from him in that year, just how to run a business and so forth. But I came to Atlanta, there really weren't too many people doing dental implants. And so at Ohio State, we had Larry Peterson there, and we used to have every week or two an implant meeting with the prostate department. And I came down there, and I think this guy didn't even have an implant kit. So I go, we got to start doing implants. We got stick glass kit. And so in that fall of my first year, I got Ed McGlumphy, a prostodontist who trained at Ohio State, to come to a one-day presentation at a hotel and invited about 50, 60 people there. This is in the fall of 1990. There weren't very many people doing implants back then in Atlanta. Noble Biocare paid for part of his, he basically paid for his trip down there. So I got them to help. So that got me started. And so I've always thought I wanted to have a big implant practice. And I know for the young guys that want to build a big implant practice, there's a lot of good reasons to do it. And it's a lot of work, truthfully. And I think if you want to develop a big implant practice, which is what I did, and I totally love my practice, you know, there's reasons to do it. Number one, it's basically a cash crop. And it's something that you can do when it's not seasonal, like wisdom teeth. You know, it's like wisdom teeth are summertime and winter, and it gives you procedures to fill in your gaps when the other cases slow down. My practice, basically, it's evolved. Implants have taken it over. I probably do 60% implants, 70%. Another 30% orthodontic surgery, and the rest on wisdom teeth. I don't have a big wisdom teeth practice because the implants and the jaw surgery have taken it over. And partly is because I've set my facility up, which I'll talk about, to put people to sleep. We trained Ohio State to intubate people. So at the ORs with, I can tube people. And so it may be easier to do bigger cases, but that's not necessary for people. But kind of helped me get started with an implant practice.
Nice.
In the 90s, like back then, there was a lot of edentulous people. We did hip bone grafts and in the office, and I had an anesthesiologist come in one day a week doing those. And that's kind of evolved now to basically doing zygomatic implants. So there's a lot of good reasons to do implant practice. And number one, the other reason is it's very rewarding. You know, it's like I haven't burned out of my dentistry yet in my oral surgery. I love going into work after weekend and Mondays and Tuesdays and doing cases. Obviously, you get tired at the end of the day or at the end of the week sometimes. But one thing I've learned about implants, it's like it's probably the hardest surgery we do. You know, so I do a lot of orthodontic surgery, and it's like manual labor. But the implants, they're technically, to do them right, I believe, difficult. And so I have a lot of complications. I mean, I try to keep it down, but I mean, I don't have a lot, but they happen. So my theory is you've got to really become a good craftsman with it. And so I think if you're going to build an implant practice as a young guy, You want to, first of all, become a good craftsman. And every implant case you do, take your time and do it as good as you can. What I've seen with a lot of young surgeons, and I've been there, is you don't always get the implant position. You get distracted by anesthesia stuff going on and you get it crooked. And it's just not your best work. And so you want to block off enough time to do that. And I brought an associate on this summer. A little bit about my practice. I guess I've been in practice like 30 years. I had an associate 97 for a year and a half, and he went out to Phoenix, Carl Gaspin, a good friend of mine. And so I brought someone on this summer, Paul Cho, he's from Chapel Hill. And so I'm kind of onboarding him, and it's, you know, the volume of implants I have and kind of the complexity of the case, it's something he really hasn't seen in a residency. But it's taken me 30 years to evolve to that too. And, you know, it's like for those guys getting going, you need to take a lot of CE courses, I believe, to do implants, because implants in our specialty in oral surgery, you know, they have to teach so many things, cosmetic surgery, trauma, you know, and then TMJ, and implants probably are on the back burner. And I really feel they are. And you've got to catch up with the periodontists that have caught up. And fortunately, we have people like Michael Block and Peter Moy that have done a lot for our specialty and have really kept the implant training strong in our organization. But I was at a CE meeting a few years ago, sitting as a perio restorative meeting in Boston, and I was sitting with these young resident women, you know, most of the morning, you sit in the same seat. And I was asking about questions about connective tissue grafts and some of these data. And I was amazed at their grasp of the literature on implant dentistry and their periodontal residencies, I think at Tarnow's program in New York. But that's who we're competing against. And so, but the other hand, as oral surgeons, we have a lot of advantage. Our surgical skills are the best in the dental field, for sure. We get trained as really good surgeons. Our facilities are better than periodontal facilities and GPs. And our staff, we have plenty of staff, usually more staff. So we have all these things that can build our implant practice well. The disadvantage, like the periodontist, they get it in their residency, a good training. Probably a periodontal residency now, I believe, probably gets a little more implant training than an oral surgeon, because that's basically what their programs focus on. But it's easy to catch up, and you can catch up, but you're going to have to like educate yourself. I've done that my whole life. My wife calls me a CE junkie, but it keeps you from getting burned out.
Yeah.
The GPs are doing a lot of implants too. And that's just a fact of life. On the side, I actually own a dental office that I started up about 5 years ago, and there's two dentists working there, and they place implants. And I'm fine with that because that's what GPs do. I kind of get to see what they do. And their advantage is the patient's in their chair, and they can probably give the patient price start to finish. And so that's one of our disadvantages as specialists, but I've worked ways around that.
That's awesome. I was going to ask you, you know, a lot of younger surgeons kind of have trouble with implants, or at least enjoying the process of implants, because they just, like you're saying, they take more work, they take more maybe experience or technique focus than third molars, I think. There's more complications, more problems that can happen. You see the patient for a longer period of time, and it's just a more involved procedure than the kind of one and done wisdom teeth. So what have you done to kind of streamline implants and make them, you know, not a painful, but like a successful, enjoyable process for you, your staff, and the patient?
Yeah, that's a good question. Truthfully, wisdom teeth are like the easiest, nicest thing to do. And unfortunately, we do enjoy it, you know, because after a lot of hard implant cases. But I guess I just take my time with my consults. I've got a fee for service practice. And to do that, you've got to like start your practice from patient walking in the door till the out of the door until they leave. And so you need to have some good staff, at least. Over the years, I've, you know, up and down the staff. And so you need a good assistant with you that can do your consults with you and so forth, or implant coordinator, however you're going to do it. That begins with that. One of the things I've learned is like, I take my time in my consults. And I went to, there's a Progressive Dental marketing company about 6 years ago. I was at a Pecos implant meeting, and I signed up with them to do my new website, market full arches. And I went to, and so I spent a lot of money on videos and so forth. And they also had a day and a half course I took a whole bunch of my staff to on how to do consults and generate business. And they had a guy from Clear Choice came and talked to us. Yeah, you want to get 100 people phoning in. And out of that, you're going to get 5 walking into your office and they're going to sign up. And my staff were there and my receptionist like, that's not our business model. And that wouldn't work for me. That would make me unhappy. Okay. That would take a lot of infrastructure and it'd be tough to do. And my receptionist earlier that year, she'd been with me a long time. She actually said, yeah, in February and January, I looked at your consults and you had 93% of them came back and signed up. And I go, that's pretty good. So she told the guy hosting this meeting, he goes, no, nobody does that. And so he didn't believe her and we didn't say yet. And so we left it at that. And so I go, is that really true? She's like, yeah. But it's like the whole process of doing your consult is key. And there was an orthodontist when I started my practice out. He goes, you know, you spend all this time doing a consult and if only 1 in 10 sign up, he goes, you're not going to have a practice. You need to get 9 in 10 of your consults to sign up because that's where you spend your time. And that's kind of really important for implant dentistry because you're going to spend a lot of your afternoons, or at least I do my consults mostly afternoons. And to do it right, you've got to spend time. And it's I block time off with that. And the way we set it up is I have an assistant go in first for 20 minutes. And we've got a lot of dental implant models and so forth. And they'll explain the process and show the models and get the x-rays ahead of time. So I can walk in and I can see what's going on. And then I spend that time with the patient and residency, you're taught, well, you always look in the mouth first, you look at the x-ray. Well, it's changed a little bit now because you get people come in full arch. They got a lot going on in their mouth. So you kind of want to look at the CT. So then you are at the end, the Panorex, I take both. And then I look in their mouth and then I get an idea of what's going on. Then I'll go back to the x-ray in front of sitting in there. And I go, a lot of times I'd say probably 1 in 4 times I sit down and say, I got to put my thinking cap on and think for 5 minutes or a few minutes to think about that. And the patient's always good. You know, I like to hear that. And because a lot of these cases to me, even in 30 years, are really challenging to treatment plan. Mm-hmm. So many different ways to go. And so then a lot of times I go back, look in the mouth. So, I mean, it's kind of you carry on a conversation with them. So having that time and not being in a rush is really critical. And one of the things I've done years ago, I mean, it's a little bit of a practice management thing, but I looked at how much time I spend on an implant patient start to finish and what my profit is. I do that for orthodontic surgery and for wisdom teeth. And I've kind of priced them all out the same. So to me, it's like I'm fine doing consults in those three areas. Because I can take my time and I'm just as excited to do each one.
Yeah, that's helpful to hear, you know, being thorough and having a good consult and kind of making sure you do it right. Do you do any type of kind of digital workflow or how do you use technology to help you out?
Yeah, so I've got a lab tech working for me. Actually, 6 years ago, I hired a full-time lab tech. So I've got a really big time digital workflow. So I'll talk about that. That's a big part of my practice. About 7-8 years ago, I was at an AMIS meeting. I'm going to get a scanner, bought an iTero scanner to scan, put implants in front teeth. Cause you know that you say if you take out a central incisor, you've got to put a temporary onto that day to preserve the papilla, which I don't think is completely true, but it's another topic. And so anyway, I wanted to do immediate temporaries, but I didn't want to spend an hour making a temporary. So there's a lab down in Florida. What's his name? Grady. So I bought this iTero scanner. I put front teeth in, scanned them, delivered a flipper, and sent the data to his lab. And he would send me a milled PMMA tooth 10 days later, and we'd deliver it. And so I did that for a while. So then I bought a scanner. I had a patient came in that worked for Baudenta. He goes, hey, man, that's Tinker Toys from what we do. He goes, we'll sell you a scanner and a mill, and your assistant can mill these teeth. So I did that about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. So we put the front tooth in, scan it with a scan body, and then my assistant would mill it. And 2 hours later, we would deliver a milled PMMA top tooth. For many years, I tried making teeth, and I tried to get my GPs to make provisional teeth, and it's just they don't want to do it. I brought a speaker in to educate them how to make teeth, a prosthodontist from St. Louis that I met at an AMIS meeting. General dentists don't want to make temporary teeth. It's just not profitable. Yeah. It's not profitable for us.
Yep.
So then the software takes a lot of updating. You know, you got a 3-shape scanner, and the software needs to get updated, your mill. So I hired a lab tech like 6 years ago, and I go, Larry, this is like out there. I go, you're probably going to be busy assisting me as a surgical assistant 60% of the time and doing lab work. And so the first 5 or 6 months, he was assisting me. And we went from one teeth to three tooth bridges. That's the biggest the mill would do. And then he goes, hey, man, you need a bigger mill. Just kind of like you need a bigger bolt jaws. So we've gone through three mills. So now every like probably one day or 5 days a week, at least, or 6 days a week, we're doing immediate temporary on a front tooth or molar. And probably 70% of our implants are 80% are immediately loaded. And so we'll take out a front tooth, we'll put an implant in, unless the buccal plate's gone or so forth. We do our bone graft. And then the patient wakes up with a healing abutment on. And before they leave, we mill them with temporary, PMMA temporary. And so that keeps him busy. And it's the point that I have three lab techs now because they also deliver finals. That has been a really big boom, but it was also a mega investment. I probably spent $300,000 on lab equipment initially, and he was a big investment. And I was really lucky. He's a really smart guy. Like, lab techs aren't all created equal. So I hired him not knowing what I was getting. Mm-hmm. And I go, can you make a clip? He goes, no, man, I was a digital designer. So he goes, I can send it out. So, but then I realized his weakness was his asset, because that's all I really needed was a computer guy. And he sits on the computer and designs teeth. And so if somebody comes in with a broken off front tooth, like it happens a lot, number 8 or 7, you hit the door, it's carious, it's internal resorption, we'll extract it. I'll tell you a little bit about our extraction technique. This is key. Brought my new doctor on, Paul, on. I go, there's a key to taking these front teeth out because you don't want to make a flap. About 7 years ago, I was at a perio meeting in San Francisco, and there's these little thin periotomes, DOWELL sells them, and there's a straight one and a curved flexible one, and we tap those around the central incisor or whatever front tooth it is, even bicuspids. It goes in between the PDL and the tooth, and the little tip of it will flex. And so I'll spend 8 or 9 minutes walking that around the tooth until the central incisor is very mobile and it comes out easily. That way you don't reflect a flap and you can extract a tooth. These are one of the best instruments I've ever bought. they're Dowell, wow. W-E-L-L, and I have them on every single extraction tray. So I use them for almost all anterior teeth. If you get an ankylosed tooth that has external resorption, you kind of can feel it, and that's sometimes you can't do it. So we pull this front tooth out, and then we'll put the incisor in. And when you put an immediate teeth in the same day, you learn to not put that long axis coming out of the tip. You learn that you want it to be at the cingulum. And so you look at the occlusion. You make sure it's not too far. Sometimes they have a deep bite, so you've got to put your tooth a little deeper. And so we put these implants in that day. Like a central incisor, I usually use a 4.3 Nobel replace, like a conical connection implant, because they grip tight. And then you've got a buccal gap on them. And we put Mineralis cancellus allograft in there. I like to use a cancellus graft, nothing with cortical bone. And I mix it with PRF. And we densely pack that in there. And a couple notes on that. So you can use any brand. I just use brand Mineralis because I've used it for 10 years and I have a high success rate with it. Last May, there was a shortage on the red stopper tubes for PRF. So I went about 6 weeks not having PRF. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not exaggerating. We do 2 to 4 front teeth a week and maybe a bunch of other, probably 10 immediate loads, including molars a week. And we almost get no failures. I get failures if I make a bad call or just it's loose or I'm, technically something doesn't work. But it's so successful with the PRF, and we couldn't put it in. We had a higher failure rate. I didn't know, but we had these patients coming in July and August, like, it just didn't take. There's a buccal gap there and the bone graft wasn't taken. I literally would have to take the implant out and I'd put some BMP in there with some Mineralis and rebuild it. The PRF makes a big deal, makes a big difference in my opinion. So I think if you're going to do immediate extractions like that, you need a PRF machine. So anyway, so we deliver these teeth and we take them out of occlusion, about a millimeter or so out of occlusion. And yet we've got a Zircon Zahn mill. We went from some off-brand that Biodenta sold us to a Almer Gobot or whatever, gray box Ceramil, which was about $35,000. And then the Zircon Zahn's about $50,000. So it's a big investment. but the quality jumps up with each one. It's like a 5X mill and they fit perfectly. And a lot of times my assistant delivers these teeth. She just screws them into place. It's like, that's how quick they go in.
Nice.
And they plug the hole with foam tape and composite. So, and it's pretty profitable. You know, we do these, they come in with a broken tooth examination. You know, we take a Panorex and a CT. I always get a Panorex, so it's something easy to compare. Reproducible radiograph down the line, like 6 months later. Whereas a CT, you always get a different shot. So I believe in getting both x-rays. So that's our process. And we do that for molars too.
Wow. Real quick on that, the dowel, a flexible peritome. I was just looking online, but it looks like they sell it in like a three-piece kit with three different peritomes. Is that the one you use, the root peritomes and root extractor, or which one is it?
That's what is a kit. There's a corkscrew in there too.
Yeah, I see that.
I get the corkscrew too. Believe it or not, I use that a lot. You get a tough tooth and I'll put a fine fissure burr in there and I'll start the corkscrew and you pull hard as heck and it'll pop it out. I don't use that until it's loosening. I mean, sometimes I'd say one in five or six or seven, I have to section the tooth with the fine fissure burr.
Okay.
But it takes a while. I could spend 20 minutes taking that tooth out. You know, it's like you've got to be gentle and you've got to have a good assistant, good tapper of the mallet. And that's another thing. It's I've got a lot of assistants and I've got some that have been with me for a long time. And when I get a tough implant case, you know, I got a lot of some of the younger assistants, they step up. They want to be your first assistant, second assistant. And I let them do it. But when I get a tough case, I go, okay, I need my girl Casey here to assist me. And so, I mean, it's like my staff realize these can be tough cases. I've got a lot of experience, but still they're tough for me.
Yeah.
So best put foot forward with them.
Yep. And then when you're when you're placing the implant, immediate implant on these anterior teeth, how are you getting the perfect position and how, like, where do you know to put it? Are you using a guide or stuff like that? Can you explain that?
I've got my lab tech makes guides for almost all pre-planned cases and I've made them for the immediate extractions, but I don't find them very useful.
Okay.
If it's a central incisor or the one tooth next to it, I don't need a guide or teeth on either side. I usually don't get a guide because I can eyeball it better. So I take a round burr and I'll put it right in the palatal bone just to get, first I'll take a long two millimeter drill bit out of the guided kit that's really long, if it's a central, and I'll kind of see where I want that long axis to come up. I'll look at the adjacent teeth. You want it to come out of the incisum and not buckle to that. And so I'll get an idea that the long axis of it. Then I'll take a round burr, put a little dimple on that palatal bone deep up in, maybe 10 millimeters deep. Then I'll take that 2 millimeter pilot drill and I'll drill it in there, maybe partway. And I'll look at it again. Sometimes I'll put a paralleling pin in there, but you want to spend minutes, not seconds or a long time, so to speak, lining up the first drill. And so then I'll put the 3.5 by 13 drill bit, which is the next one in there, or 16. Sometimes I'll just go with a 10 and check the angle of it again. Then I'll put if it's a 16, full length 16 in there. Mm-hmm. And then I'll do the next drill bit, but I won't go to the next one until I do that. But I've had a couple of patients that I got maybe a little bit too far buckle so that the long axis would be coming out lingual to the tip, but not on the cingulum. I thought, well, that's good enough because my temporaries, you know, they put a little composite, you can't tell. But then they go to the dentist 6 months later and they can't really do a screw retained final on that because the screw tip's coming out, the screw axis opening's too close to the lingual edge. And so they've got to use a custom abutment. So then they've got to cement it. Then you've got to deal with cement retained crown and peri-implantitis. And so I really try and make this so all my implants are screw retained. Mm. And so that's why you've got to keep it near the cingulum. And the other issue is you've got to put your implant deep enough. 3 millimeters is the minimum. Then it's 3.5. I was at the AMOS meeting in Chicago. A couple of speakers, Marcus from Penn and Cheek, you know, they're like at 4 millimeters if you've got good bone on either side. So you don't want to go, I mean, you can go up to 4 millimeters on a patient because you want to give some running room, especially if it's a lateral incisor and a 60-year-old, I'll go 3.5. But if it's a 18, 20-year-old, you know, I'll go a hair deeper because gingiva is going to recede. And if you've got a central incisor, you can go a little bit deeper because you've got a little more running room. So those are all issues you get with experience, but you don't want to go too shallow.
And when you say 3 millimeter minimum, are you talking about subcrestal or from a line connecting the CEJs of the adjacent teeth, or what do you mean?
Yeah, good question. So from the buccal, the gingiva, the most apical aspect of that coronal gingiva.
Okay.
So the buccal gingiva. So a lot of times it's actually below the buccal. Like a 25-year-old, you probably have your buccal crest is probably 2.5 millimeters below that buccal gingival crest. So I'll put my implant 3 millimeters, 3.5, and you've got to trim that just a little bit to fit your healing abutment. So, but yeah, it's that buccal gingival margin.
Got it. So placing it palatal at the cingulum and then deep enough, at least 3 to 4 millimeters.
And it leaves you a buccal gap of like 1.5, 2 millimeters. You want that buccal gap because your buccal cortical plate's 0.9 millimeters on average. And if you have your implant right up at the edge, that'll resorb and you'll get gingival recession. So you want to leave your implant on the palate. You want to put at least 1.5 millimeters or so, or 1.25 millimeters bone graft in there. That's why you don't want to put a 5-0 implant, and you want to put a skinny enough implant to get grip, but not too fat. So you want to have room to graft that buccal to maintain. You need a couple of millimeter buccal cortical plate to prevent resorption with time.
Got it.
There's a lot of little tricks to that front tooth.
Yeah. And your graft that you're placing there in the buccal gap is, what are you mixing with your PRF?
Mineralosca. It's a cancellous cadaver bone. I get mine from Mineralosca. It's purely cancellous. I think 0.5 micron particles or about that range.
Okay.
I like to let it sit for 5 or 7 minutes, let it soak it up some.
Yeah. And then do you put any type of, membrane or covering on that little portion on the buccal gap, or how do you deal with that?
No, I don't, because the tooth is going to seal it up.
Okay. That makes sense.
So we're going to put the tooth in there that same day. I've thought about that, and I've thought about mixing some PRF membranes in there. And some of my assistants have said other surgeons have done. I just haven't done it. Now, when I do a molar, I'll tell you a little bit about my implant choice, okay? I don't get paid by any implant company. I've been around the block with different implant brands, and I've tried Zimmer's and for a long time, but the replace implants have a taper to them that tightens up better than any implant in these media extractions. They've got a 3.5, 4.3, 5.0. So usually you use a 4.3 in the front teeth, maybe a 5.0 in the canine.
Okay.
They just have better initial stability. Then I've tried a lot of BioHorizons, and some of my doctors like it, but BioHorizons have a good grip, but the Noble Active is the other Noble one, but their threads are so sharp, they don't tighten up so much. They keep cutting as you put them in, and the BioHorizons does that a little bit. So I like the Noble, and the Noble, for the young guys going out, I'll just give a little thing about pick your implant company based on, a rep that's available. A good company too, Noble Implants, I pay a little bit more per implant than I would with the other ones, because you get a big volume, you get a discount, but you don't, they're all expensive, but that's not your big implant cost. But I like the Nobel because it's color coded when you're doing 5-6 implant cases, morning or day. Your staff, it's all set up so easy with the parts. And I've got all those other systems in my office, and that's been for me in the Nobel replace tighten up immediate load better than other implants. So,
interesting.
The three brands I use are Nobel, Southern Implants for immediate molars, and Norris for zygomatic and pteroids. I've got all the other ones in my office because I've tried them all. I'm kind of phased them all out. You don't want too many implant systems because it's tough, and your referring doctors don't like too many either.
Yeah.
They like to see the product. One of the things I've done that's helped my practice, Nobel, I do a fair amount of those implants. I say, I'd like you, instead of giving me all these free things here and there, just give me my discount. But when I have a new dentist I work with, I want you to provide him with a prosthetic kit. And they go, we'll save one for discount. And I go, no, I want you to give them the full prosthetic kit with the case. So when he gets my implant patients, his assistants can grab that kit, and it's easy for them. And they've done that. So they've tooled up, over the course of years. It's a really good investment for Nobel. And I've told them that. It's like all these dentists have Nobel. So the other surgeons they work with are going to ask for Nobel too, because they've got the torque driver and so forth. Because otherwise, it's not reasonable for them to pay $500, $800 for a prosthetic kit if they're doing 3 implant cases a year early on.
Yeah.
It's like it's not reasonable for me, but it's good for the company. So that's something I'd recommend to do.
Yeah. I was going to ask if you use the parallel implant that Nobel has at all, or do you always do replaced?
I used to do that in the lower arches, like on four, because I thought they were straighter. But they just, I've gone to the replace just because they can snug up a lot. The disadvantage of the replace is because they're so tapered that sometimes you can't get them deep enough. And so I draw them, like I'm doing a 4-3 by 16, for example, on all four, and you get down in the last 2 or 3 millimeters, it tightens up. I've learned to take that out, drill further. Sometimes I tap. And so they're not the fastest implant to put in, but you've got to get the depth right. And so like if I put Noble Active in, their threads are so tight, you can always tighten them up that level, and so can Bio Horizons. You know, they're easier to put in because they don't get stuck out a little bit. And so the select, I've got to go back and drill them sometimes. But then with experience, you get really good primary stability with them. So that's just my technique.
Nice. And the replace kit is different drill set compared to the active, right? You have two different ones, or are you able to use the same drills for both?
They're different kits. So that my replace kit gets open on almost every case. And if I'm putting a 5.5 active in, which is a different drill kit, I drill for a 5.0 replace. And then we just pull out, we've got a little peel pack with the two drill bits and the carriers for the active. That way my staff don't have to open up the active kit.
Got it.
And same as the guides.
Okay.
We kind of rig it a little bit to make it more convenient and less stuff for your staff. When you have an implant practice, part of your infrastructure is having some good assistants. You need a couple sharp people in your staff. And that's kind of what oral surgeons have an advantage, I think, over periodontists, because we all have the right-hand woman or man, you know, assisting you. And those people, you get pick those people out to keep track of your implant products and assist you. So,
yeah. Hey guys, I had a brief interruption to today's podcast. As many of you know, I'm a big fan of using a headlight. I feel like a headlight is so important to being able to distinguish what is what in the patient's mouth. I recently switched to the Spectra headlight that KLS Martin sells, and it's amazing. It's super bright and has a huge field. I highly recommend it. KLS Martin has been kind enough to give us a coupon code for extra batteries and a desktop charger for free with the purchase of the headlight. This is an amazing deal because the extra batteries are extremely helpful to have so that you have them readily charged as a backup option. If your batteries die, your current ones on your headlight, you can swap them out within a matter of seconds for fresh batteries and kind of go on with seeing what you need to see. So the coupon code is capital KLSPHL, all caps, and that's an acronym for KLS Portable Headlight. And it's good until mid-January 2023. So when you order the light through your area rep, just tell them the code and you can get that discount and get those free accessories that are, in my opinion, super important to this light and being able to use it flawlessly. I hope that helps and enjoy the rest of the episode. And then I was going to ask, can you just talk a little bit about marketing and how you've kind of been successful and what you found to be the most successful with marketing to grow an implant practice?
To market implants, we're going to talk about this. So I thought about it. Number one, to market, you know, you've got internal marketing to your patients and external to your referral base. But to do this, you've really got to become an expert in implant dentistry to be a proper marketing. And that's why take your proper CE courses, educate yourself. You know, I've gone to Spear and COIS, and PICOS has good courses, the AMOS meetings. I kind of alternate between AMOS implant meeting and the AO meeting. But if you want to get serious about implants, you've got to go to those meetings and get educated, because you're going to become a treatment planner as well. You know, let's do 4 cases a year. You're going to do 50, 100, 200. And so they're going to, with time, count on you to treatment plan even complex cases. It's going to be a two-way street, but you've got to be good at treatment planning these people walking in the door. And so CE is good, and that CE helps you market yourself, because when you sit down with that patient, you're going to be confident. So I kind of look at internal marketing as having, you know, how your office is set up, having a pleasant place, you know, a good consult. You want to organize your consultation appointment. When I do my consults, mostly in the afternoons, I dress up. I put slacks and a nice shirt on. I don't wear a tie anymore. But that's showing your patients respect. So that's part of your marketing, you know, clean office, having your receptionist, you know, and that's kind of like 5-star service. You know, it's like, that's what fee for service is. You've got to do it. It's different than doing third molars in an insurance practice where sometimes the doctors don't meet the patient. You know, that's not going to happen in your implant practice. And then so you want to look at all this internal marketing stuff. And then you want to do your external marketing is your referral base and your website and going to the public. And marketing to your referral base is different than the public. And so you want to be part of study clubs. You know, I've always had one. I think if you want to get serious about implant practice, you should start up a study club and teach it, bring in speakers, you know, learn to teach some of the stuff yourself so your referring doctors look at you as an expert. I think that's really critical. And it's going to make you a better implant surgeon if you have to talk to your referring dentist about a topic. And over the years, I've learned so much hosting my study clubs, and I always have a 15-minute literature review beforehand, kind of old school from my training. But for the people that come in late, it gives them something to do. But I send out articles ahead of time online, and we review them, and I pretty much review them. But it forces you as a doctor to learn. But that makes you look like an expert to your dentist because you're covering these topics. So the study club's important, and your website is really, really critical. I spent a lot of time on my website, and one of my referring doctor goes, Andy, he goes, you got a very good website. Who did it? And it's like, well, PBH did it, but they gave me a template. But over the years, I've rewritten most sections. And it's one of the things you want to do is rewrite most of your website. Because if you have a template, if somebody Googles like how do implants work, they're going to come up with 25 doctors' websites because they all have the same front page that PBHS wrote. And you don't want that, especially on the topics that you want them to go to. So, you know, it's like every time I got upgraded to first class, I had a rule to myself, I'm going to sit down and rewrite sections of my website. And over the years, you know, I've rewritten my website and it's your own language. People read that. They're going to see, oh, doctor must have written that. It's going to be, and Google's going to crawl it better because it's fresh content. And so along those lines, you want to have videos on your website.
Yeah.
I literally have spent a lot of time learning marketing over the last 5 or 6 years because my practice was just kick along butt growing. And then I realized, okay, I got all this composition, periodontists and GPs. What am I going to do? So I've gone I went to a digital smile design course. I was the only oral surgeon there. It was half on marketing, half on cosmetics. I took my lab tech thinking about learning smile design for full arches, but he taught me about marketing, you know, things I'm talking about. It made me understand there's a whole science out there and that there's a group of general dentists, like probably 15% across the board, that just know marketing too. And you can't really hire a marketing consultant, just come in and do it. You've got to learn it yourself. And to that end, I listen to podcasts on it. There's a company, there's a guy in town, Peter Bolden's got a Atlanta dental spa, but he has the Bulletproof Dental podcast. And he and Craig Spodax is in Delray, Florida. And so I went to their meeting 2 years ago or 3 years ago. One of them was in Houston. I took some of my staff to learn. It's all about marketing. Peter's a really good digital online marketer, and he's just a smart guy. So I took my staff to that. It's mostly general dentists there. I think I was the only oral surgeon there. But it doesn't matter. You need to learn these marketing principles as an oral surgeon. Mm-hmm. We learned that, and it applied to my general dentist. I brought that back and educated my staff, and some of them were there. But I also joined a mastermind group. So he's actually having his meeting this August. I looked at it in Vegas. I've gone to two of them, but not the last year because I've learned pretty much what he has to learn.
Okay.
But you need to learn marketing as an oral surgeon if you want to get a non-insurance-driven practice. I mean, that's kind of a difference. Like,
yeah,
if you're in a practice and you rely on insurance and you get to leave 4 o'clock every day and go golfing and, you know, you don't see your patients, it's like you don't really need to study it. And if you've got a private equity company bought you out, you don't need to learn it. But if you're not in that game and you want to be in kind of the game I play in, you're going to have to spend some time learning. But it's kind of fun stuff to learn. And so 2 years ago, I paid Peter Bolden $25,000 to join his mastermind group of 15 dentists, where we met every month on a Monday night Zoom call. We had retreats. I thought it was a lot to spend, but it was one of my very best investments I ever did because it wasn't all about marketing. It's about practice management, and the principles that apply in a general dental practice apply in an oral surgery practice. And one thing for young guys to realize is like, 10, 15 years ago, I thought my oral surgery practice was like a mill on the side of the river and by. I spun some water out of it, got some power, and it kept on going. And I didn't have repeat customers. They came in the door, left, and see you later. Well, now my practice is probably 50% repeat customers and people from the internet, at least maybe more. And I've looked at my practice differently, like, okay, I've got these implant patients. This is my practice. I looked at it just like I would a general dentist, like, these are my patients. And over the years, my jaw surgery patients come back with their kids. They come back needing implants. They send their friends. My implant patients have been coming for years. And so actually, you've got to look at it differently, that it's your practice.
Yeah,
it's a different concept, I think. And it's like, that's the way implant dentistry is. It's your practice. You kind of become an implantologist, you know, from the surgery side. And that's how the marketing is. You want to call your patients up, you know, and I call them every night. Like 3 years ago, I haven't missed it yet, calling a single patient every day. And I come to Florida to my condo, I land on the plane, I get out, and I call them on the way from the airport to my condo. I call my patients I operated on that day. And they're, oh, you're in Florida. I'm like, yeah. So that is good. And you actually get a lot of questions they have. And it's they come into the complication, you know, you're on their good side because you called them. The other thing too is reviews. And so 2 or 3 years ago, I was at the Amos implant meeting. I walked by this little side booth. Bird Eye had a little thing. I, what's Bird Eye? He goes, oh, I'm the review guy, Len Tao. So I went in there. And so it made me realize how important 5-star reviews are, because that's how Google crawls your website. And so this is really good for guys to know. It's like, so I pay $2,000, it's $200 a month, maybe, or $2,000 if you pay it all. It's gone up a little bit a year, $2,000 a year. And every time a patient comes in, 2 days later, they get next day on their phone, they get a text, just like Uber. How would you rate your service? And 1 through 5. And if they didn't like it, there's a thing, say, if you had an issue, tell us what it was about, and they don't give you a review, bad review, they can send in a complaint. And so I went from having like 15 reviews, like in 2 years, to like, I don't know what I have, 180 or 200. Once you get 50 or 60, it affects Google crawling your website. And so it's called Bird Eye. It's another company that does it, but I think every surgeon that's like fee for service or can do it should have a review company. My dental office that I own has that same service. It's set up for dentists, but oral surgeons too. And
nice.
So that's how you get reviews. And then like after they come in for a post-op, they get another chance. And so it makes it easy because it pops up on their phone, because for patients to go down and call or log into something, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, just don't do it unless you really have a good service.
Yep.
Those are the website's critical.
Yeah, I was looking at your website. It's just awesome. I love all the, you have so many, what do you call it, like subcategories under all of your tabs. What's really cool is all your post-op instructions. You have so many detailed ones for every single procedure that a patient could look up. That's probably saves you even more time answering questions. You could refer them to that resource. That's tremendous.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time. And you know, your patients, if you have a good referring doctor, he sends a mom with their kids for wisdom teeth, they're still going to go to your website. And so even the people that come in anyway, it's good to have that. It's just, I can't emphasize, if you want to have a good practice, how important that website is. And like those post-op instructions, I actually hired a marketing girl too a few years ago to help me do all this. And she's kind of a semi-manager too, but she keeps our website updated and so forth. And you know, if you get serious about it, once you get enough like revenue and volume, to hire somebody to do your marketing is really critically important. She goes to some of these marketing meetings with me, so forth. Marketing meetings I go to have really been the bulletproof and the digital smile design. So
okay.
You really got to learn it.
Yep. And then I was going to ask you know, you said, and you've talked about all these CE courses you've been to. For a young surgeon who's getting out and really wants to kind of refine their implant technique, because as you know, that probably the experience that people and residents get is just all over the map with implants. Some do 10 and then others do a couple hundred. But even those who do a ton of implants in residency, what CE courses after residency would you highly recommend for guys who want to refine their implant technique?
Yeah, I actually did want to talk about that. So the Amos meeting every year, 2 days, is in Chicago. It's a pretty high-level meeting. One of the best CE courses is Michael Picos' course in Orlando, Florida. Mm-hmm. It's a pricey course. It's like $3,500. It's like 3 or 4 days. And 1 year he has single-tooth implants, soft tissue, connective tissue graft, and the next year he'll have full arch. So he started alternating it. But what the difference about his course is, he has each presenter talk 2 hours on a topic. So any given day, he'll have four speakers. So I guess he has 3 days. So he gives them enough time to get in depth on the topic. It'll be guided surgery. It'll be connective tissue graft, particulate grafting, or full arch. But he goes, they go through these in details. And when you leave that meeting, you really feel like you've learned a lot. It's open to GPs and so forth. And so, I mean, I go to these meetings. I learn a lot talking to the general dentists. There's some general dentists out there that are doing these things, and they're trying a lot of new stuff. And they go, oh, this is working for me. And so don't discount what you can learn from a general dentist. So PECOS's courses,
yeah,
the AO meeting is really good in the spring. So Academy of Osseointegration. So I kind of alternate that every other year because it's a lot of the same speakers. One thing that's been really helpful for me, and this is probably after a few years out, they're expensive. I went to COISES. I got his implant training, occlusal treatment planning and occlusion, and then the implant course for a week, but it's like 10 grand. That was probably better after I've been out in a few years. And then Spear out in Phoenix, he has facially generated treatment planning. He had a full arch workshop I took. And I'm usually the only oral surgeon at these, but you've got to somehow learn about general dentistry. I would recommend for the young guys, go to in your community, go to the parallel meetings, the localized, like Georgia Society of Periodontics. I've gone to the meetings that are like, Letcher, what are you doing here? It's like, I'm learning what you guys are learning, you know, because inexpensive meetings, you can just drive to them, you know? And so those and go to the study. There's a lot of CE out there. And I would figure out what you want to learn, you know? So I spent a lot of time. I spent 25 grand taking a zygomatic course. I went out to Vichy Brumard because I was taking these Zygo courses, but I wanted to do it hands-on. I was always intimidated by them. I went to New York, you know, Nobel sent me there, but it's like, I didn't want to do one without like having my gloves in the surgery. And so he has this course in Phoenix where you pay $25,000. It was a really hard check to write. And you get to do two quad zygoma cases and pterygoids. And I went out there on a Wednesday in the afternoon as didactic, and you get a temporary license. And I did that with him, and it was one of the very best things. I couldn't believe it's a lot of money, but I do several zygomatic implants a week now.
Wow.
It's just part of my treatment planning. And so that's probably further in your career do that. But it's like, you've got to make the investment in the CE if you want to be a true implant surgeon. And the good thing about CE too is you go to these courses, when you're offering patient treatment plan, you have confidence in it, you know, rather than like, because you've seen all these other people doing them and so forth. You got to be ready for failures. It's like my new guy was in like this fall, and one Wednesday afternoon he's there, you know, it's pretty early, and it's like onboarding him. And it's like every patient I saw that afternoon for like 4 or 5 post-ops had a failing implant or bone graft. It's like bone loss. I'm like, gee, I go, Paul, man, this is not, my success is good, but this is not typical. I remember going home one day, it's like, gosh, I wanted to have a drink of wine. It's like, I don't drink much, but it's like, it was really tough. But it's like, you know, luckily your days aren't all like that, but you've got to be prepared to, like, if you got some bone loss on the front of an implant, to bail on it, something about it. And so that's just part of implant dentistry. That's why each case you do, you've got to do the very best you can do and take your time. You know, and I teach other surgeons at courses, I go, you just got to go slow, because even doing your very best work as a craftsman, you're going to get complications.
Yeah, that's a good point. Take your time, be methodical, use all your resources, and then get used to those complications for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's been really helpful. I think this, for me at least, has been very enlightening to hear about how you've set up your practice, how you kind of refined your implant technique. All this has been really helpful. A lot of great tips that I'm going to take back to my practice. So I appreciate you discussing that. If there's listeners who kind of have further inquiries or questions about what we've talked about, are you okay if they reach out to you, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's fine. I'll give you've got my email address and my cell number.
Okay. We
can put it on that. I don't mind surgeons calling me. I have a fair amount of people come by and watch and observe and support. Not a lot, but I'm totally fine with that.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'll put your email in the show notes then, in case listeners want to reach out. And I'd love to, there's so many topics we could discuss, but I'd love to reconnect with you and do some more podcast topics down the road if you're interested.
Yeah, I'm interested. I feel like after 30 years, time to share my knowledge a little bit if people want to hear it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, good. And then I have some rapid fire questions for you, if you don't mind. The first one is, what's the best book you've read in the past year?
Something about Diamond Eye. Fiction. I read a lot of books, always reading books.
Okay.
Read a fiction book. I think it's called Diamond Eye. It's about a Russian sharpshooter in World War II. But then some of the other good books, like the ones that on your podcast, you've asked that question, like David and Goliath. I read that based on your knowledge. And
what did you think about it?
I loved it. I told it to a bunch of my business friends, like past CEOs of large corporations. They're like, love that book. It's an old one, but it's like more enlightening. So that was one of my favorite of all. So even though somebody's mentioned it, then The Psychology of Money, I just finished. So now I'm reading one, the audio. I do the audio books, like Why the Rich Are Getting Richer. It's kind of that Rich Dad, Poor Dad series.
Yeah.
That's actually the opposite of The Psychology of Money thought process. So those are good books.
Awesome. I'll look some of those up and run through that, because I also love listening to Audible and going through as many books as I can. Well, my next question is, what non-oral surgery thing do you do in your life that helps you with your daily oral surgery skills?
There's a lot of things. I have to say, I take tennis lessons from a pro 2 or 3 days a week. I keep myself really healthy, fit looking. I think that's part of your success in implant dentistry. You know, you want to look sharp. I didn't mention it, but it's like I dress up nicely for my consults. But I take these lessons in the morning with a pro. I'm a pretty good tennis player. I've been doing them for 10 years and I play competitive tennis. But every lesson I go, he's got something new he's teaching me. And so and he's always got a regimen. And so I go to work. And I've got experienced assistants and inexperienced assistants. And I teach all the time. It's like, because, you know, most of my patients are asleep. And so my younger assistants, I go, you guys, like, don't take it bad. But I go, this is like my tennis pro. As good as I am, he's always teaching me something. And so I use that analogy to my assistants. I go, even though Casey's can do this, is I go, I'm telling you how to hold the suction here, do this, load instruments. I go, because you can always get better. It makes me stress less. And so I carry that teaching into my practice. So
nice. That's awesome. What forceps do you use to remove tooth number 12?
I use the upper universe. What is it? A 150 or 151, whatever.
150. Yeah.
Yeah. I take a peritomes first. I always mobilize from the peritome.
Okay.
Those dial peritomes on every tooth, unless it's flopping in the brace.
Yes. Got it. Okay. What's the best movie or series you've seen in the past year?
I'm easy, man. I like Top Gun. I like that Top Gun movie.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. And then how about favorite quote? Do you have a quote that you kind of come back to or that you enjoy?
Oh, gosh. I forgot you're going to ask me that. Like, I like when my dad had a sign up in his office. My dad was a home builder in a small town. And he had a little sign that said, drink is the curse of the working class. I'm sorry. Wrong. It's work is a curse of the drinking class. Work is a curse of the drinking class.
That's a good one. I haven't heard that.
Yeah. And he had a little, you think about it, there's a lot to it, you know?
Yeah. Very profound. I like that. I'm going to have to ponder that and think about that more. That's a good one.
But yeah. I encourage your young guys to build up an implant practice. It's like enjoyable. I'm down here in South Beach at my condo and I go home. There's an ENT doctor who I worked out in the gym with, who he just retired. And I'd be glad he takes, oh man, I hated my job. Sunday nights, I could not stand going to work. I dreaded it. And I'm sitting there thinking, I go, gosh, like I'm going back on, and I got a full arch case and then I got a jaw surgery. I go, I'm like, rather do that than go off 18 holes. And it's like, I was excited to go back. And that's the beauty of our specialty. You know, it's like when you do it right, it can be really exciting, man. It's fun.
Oh, absolutely. That's awesome. I'd love to do some more podcasts with you about your techniques for zygomatic implants, for sinus lifts, you know, for these different procedures would be great to hear about. But it's so great that you to hear that you enjoy your implant practice, you enjoy doing implants. I think once you kind of get good knowledge and a good system set up, it can be enjoyable. Because I also just love doing implant cases. But I've noticed when I'm talking with my colleagues, that's not the case for many. Many are kind of, every time an implant walks in the door, it's more like, oh, geez, you know, now we got to deal with this complicated situation. And it's very stressful for a lot of people. So it's good to hear how you've set your system up.
No, it is work. You've got to be prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
I have some implant cases. They're like, gosh, that's a hard case. for 30 years, it looks routine to start, but they're hard and you just got to be ready for it.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, Andy.
Great talking to you.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Have a good day.
Okay. See ya.
Okay. Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Everyday Oral Surgery. Once again, please email me at grantstuckey@gmail.com if you have any topics you'd like to hear about, guests you'd like to hear from, or if you yourself would love to be a guest, please, please email me or text me at 720-441-6059. I'd also just love hearing from people if you enjoy the podcast or, you know, learn something from it or talk to a friend or connected with someone because of the podcast. That just makes my day. So please shoot that correspondence over to me and I will see you on the next episode. Thank you.